Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and this radio program that we like to call Satsang is for August the 18th, 2018. It's hot here. It's getting hot. They say there's no global warming. I don't know about that. Anyway, I'm grateful that you chose to be with me on this very important. We're going to talk about ulterior motives. They're the key to a lot of our mischief in this life. Most of us have some ulterior motive. Some of it is very, very conscious, and others are very unconscious in us. And I got some wonderful questions about the subject, so I thought we would do it. And I want to remind you that this radio program, as is all of our TV programs and the offerings on the Aspire website, they are there because of your loving gift, your kindness, and our sponsors make this possible through their monthly and quarterly donations. And I hope that you will consider becoming a sponsor and helping us. It is only through your tax-deductible gifts that we are allowed to be here offering to you this program, as well as our TV programs. And in the fall, we're going to be showing you some really wonderful programs that I did many years ago called What is the Point of It All? And it's about what is the point of life and what are we doing here and what is this really all about? So it'll all be there for you in the fall, and I hope that you will avail yourself of it. And understand, it is there because of the generosity of some very wonderful people, really wonderful. So I hope you become a sponsor. If you're interested, go to the website at aspire.org. You will see support. If you click on that on the main page, a drop-down menu will ensue, and it will say, why support Aspire? It's a very good question, and on that I explain everything about where your donation goes and how deeply important it really is. What is a motive? It is something that triggers us to do something or incite an action. Motivation is very big in us. If we're going to do anything, we have to be motivated. And what is it that motivates a person into action to do something, to live their life the way they do? What motivates you to live the way you do? What motivates you to listen to this radio program? What are you looking for? What motivates you? And when you really think about motivation as it pertains to a spiritual practice, that's a big one. So let's take a look and see what we've got here. The first question comes from Carl in Las Vegas, Nevada. My desire for anything spiritual is far less than my hope for survival. I know. What do I do about that? And isn't that not natural, Carl? Yes, Carl, you are right. It is natural. If you are living by the DNA, which is geared towards survival and survival alone, just keeping the body alive and trying to sustain our life, even though it has no noble purpose, maybe it's not doing anything other than just existing here on earth and going through the routines of survival, brushing your teeth, you know, taking a shower, going to work, eating, things like that, just the normal survival things, hoping for a few kind moments here and there, watching TV, letting the Barca lounger be your cradle and letting the TV wash over you like sewage. Yes, most of us do live like that, and we don't really mature and understand what we're here for. It is very difficult for people to understand through spiritual insight what it means to live a life worth living. An unexamined life, Socrates said, is a life not worth living. If you go to the website at aspire.org, take a look at my programs on a life worth living, you will see. I talk in depth on the whole idea of what it means to have a meaningful life. And most of us don't care to have a meaningful life. We're brought into this world without any real inner attention or awakening to the fact of why we are here and that we are even here. We just don't see it. A lot of people just come into this little earthly planet and they live their life according to the means and the methods of earthly living, which means survival of the fittest. And that's as far as we go. Science takes it that far and says, well, we're here and this is our makeup, our biology, our chemistry, and they are right. They are absolutely correct. I do not fight with that. But to leave it there and not go any further with our life, any further with our heart, our soul, our essence, to not go any further with the development of ourselves, spiritually speaking, or even to seek a meaning beyond our physicalities and our own personal science, it seems to me that would be very, I don't want to say wrong, but I don't think it would be advantageous to us. I don't think it would be helpful. I don't think it's intelligent, actually. So you're saying to me, Carl, that your desire for anything spiritual is far less than your hope for survival. I understand. So your priorities are put in a posture and in a position where you are living according to your biology. And in living in that way, I become ruthless. I don't care about anything other than what I want, what I believe in, what I think. I just don't care. And because I don't care and because I don't see things in proportion to the quality of my spirit, the quality of love that lives within me, the true authentic nature that is beyond my physicality, my body, my biology, I merely live as an existence here hoping to be, entertained enough and filled up with enough knowledge or filled up with enough good times, as people will say, to die and think I had a good life. I don't think that many people understand what a good life is. I do hospice work, and some of the people, Carl, that before they leave, they talk to me, and we have kind of these in-depth conversations, and what we really find out is that they think a good life is having a lot of pleasures, a lot of travel, especially the women. They love this travel thing. It's their whole life. They think that if they had a lot of family and good times and they can kind of look back at their life from the scrapbook of their thinking, that they've had a good life. That is not a good life. And, you know, I listen to it every week when I'm there, listening to what they're saying, what they're not saying, what is going on, the difficulties of their physicality, what's going on as their body is deteriorating, and they look at it like they don't want to go, so the body is forcing them out. They never can think about what life was really all about, or even still could be really about. They have their religious ideas and ideals. They've come to a conclusion. Religion has told them this, you know, you had so many years and you had good times, you had bad times, but you had a good life if the good times outshined the bad times. And that's it. Didn't go any further. And for me, that wouldn't have been enough, but I'm sure that it would have been enough for me in many past lives that I've had. You've got to look at your life from another point of view, and I can't get you to do that. You see, here's the motive behind it all. You have to have that thing inside. You have to feel the pull inside. If you don't feel the pull, and I have colleagues that don't feel the pull, if you don't feel the pull, you won't want to move any deeper into the meaning of this lifetime. You won't want to. You will just live on the surface of it. And I'm afraid that's what most of us do. You suffer from an affliction, Carl, believe it or not. And you don't know it, but you're writing to me and taking the time to write, taking the time to listen to me is a big deal. It really is. It's a very big deal. So what can I say to you? Do those things that make love possible. Maybe search. Search within yourself. You wouldn't be writing me in this very moment if something weren't happening to you, if something weren't clicking inside of you, if something weren't saying to you, hey, guess what? There's something wrong down here, or there's something more for you to see. You suffer from an affliction that is from the collective unconscious, Carl, and people live off the collective unconscious. They think from the collective unconscious. They think and live from the idea and the ideals of what they believe in, what they think is good and bad, right and wrong. They just don't get it. They just literally do not get it. When we merge ourselves with popular opinion, we put ourselves in some very, very precarious positions. And that's an ugly thing we do, but we do it. And I can't get you to stop, and I can't get you not to do it. I just can't. I am there for those who have already looked at this whole situation I've talked about and said, this is not enough. I can't live just for bread alone, as it were, metaphorically and physically. Carl, I wish you well. You're a part of the great mass of humanity. And one day, wherever you are, you'll wake up to a little bit of the fact that there's more to this than what you thought. I hope that helps you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Next question comes from Nathan. He does not tell me where he lives. What I want is for my spiritual life to help me with my earthly life. Can this be done? I struggle, Nathan. That's what everybody wants, Nathan. Everybody wants their spiritual life, as it were. I think it's more religious, but they want their religious life to serve their earthly life. Everything must serve my survival. And if it doesn't serve my survival in any way, shape, or form, if there's no relevance in something that is presented to me that helps me have an easier, better life, then what good is it? It just isn't any good at all. And people live by this kind of thing over and over and over and over again. They never really mature or grow or expand, not at all. They just live according to how the wind blows in the moment. So your spiritual life isn't here to serve your earthly life. Not at all. Your earthly life is here to serve the spiritual. And if you can turn this boat around a little bit, if you can have a complete reverse of insight, complete reversal of belief and thought, if you can just let it all go and put love first, you have to let love live you. Now, up to now, we've let all sorts of things live us. Fear, hate, anger, emotionality. We've let that rule our entire lives. All of us have. Now, when the moment comes when you can let love live you, it means that you have placed love in the core, the center of everything you do. It is the highest motivation of living for us. And instead of struggling with the idea of having difficulties on this earth and not wanting to have them, we face our difficulties in love, from love to love. Every difficulty I have is a result in my life of some negation I've had in this life where I haven't put love before my hate, my fear. That's all it is. Now, when you replace compassion and love with the idea of what you think of as fair and right and just, then you start to see everything is exactly where it needs to be, as it needs to be. Everything is perfect, just as it is. And if you can look at it from that point of view, an unfolding will happen, a beauty will happen. Whether I like it or not, whether I even know it or not, I am being guided. I know that sounds stupid, but it's true. I am being guided. I am being taken care of. Now, oftentimes we don't see this, we don't understand this, we don't get this. It doesn't click for us because we have our idea about how life should work. If things are going to work out, then we want it da 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 da. Show me the money first. That's always the first thing. Then the second thing is, you know, our health and things like that. We want to be healed. We don't have any intent or motivation for awakening. We just want to be spared, or we want things to go our way so we don't have to struggle or suffer. And because we live in this modality, because we live in this mentality, we set up for ourselves many, many traps, many difficulties that are going to arise in our life over and over and over again. And they're going to be the same thing that we have struggled with many, many times before. They don't go away. They just intensify. I notice as people get older, they are either maturing or rotting. You either mature or you rot. And most people rot. They get worse and worse and worse. Even my students, there is no ripening in them. They're rottening, as I say. They live and hear what I have to say. I give them meditations. They pick everything apart. They are analytical. They are suspicious. Some of them are senile. It just goes on and on and on. Their mischief never ends. And they don't give up on the mischief. That's the part that really is interesting. They don't give up on their mischief. They just keep it going. And they think it's clever, or it makes them better than, or righter than, or righteous. And when my sense of self-preservation starts to become the desperateness of my life, I will form self-righteousness. Self-righteousness and self-preservation coming together make me crazy. They make me analytical. They make me angry. They make me another person. And you don't want that in your life. You really don't want to live in that manner. You want to live by the manner of your heart, your spirit, your beingness. If you don't, you will miss. You will miss everything that is deeply important to your life. So I say to you, you know, your spiritual life is the core of your living. It isn't religious life. It isn't a life where you adopt a philosophy or a religion. It isn't that at all. And if you think it's that, you miss. It's where you live by love. You seek love in everything, patience, kindness. This modality, this method of living is not easy for the average person, nor can most people do it. Just can't do it. Their sense of self-righteousness and self-preservation come together, and they formulate a kind of a calloused attitude about life, about other people. And when you're calloused and cynical, you can't be in an authentic spiritual practice. It can't be done. So you have to decide what is the way for you. And if it's more important for you to be callous, cynical, then that's the way it is for you. And I guarantee you life will reflect that one way or another. always be willing, Nathan, and I say this to you with all due respect, if you really want an answer, always be willing to take the lower seat at the table. If you understand that statement, it will help you immensely. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question. This comes from Kevin in San Diego. If our philosophy is to resist evil, are we on the right path, Kevin? Well, Kevin, I don't know what you call evil. Jesus said, resist not evil. How about that? Ooh, boy, they don't like that one. What did he mean by resist not evil? He was talking about the idea of don't hate evil. If you hate it, you become it. So that's what he meant by do not resist it. You have to see the meaning of your life. To answer your question, you really have to see the meaning of your life. You have to not conjure it up and pretend like you understand it. You have to recognize that meaning as it exists within your loving heart. Everything in this life, sweet man, no matter what, is about the loving heart. Most people have loving hearts, but they have covered them up with hardness of heart, as it were called by Jesus. This hardness is that calloused, ugly, cynical part of us that can't recognize the beauty and the existence of beauty in this life. So we live according to the manner of the worst part of ourselves. We live in and by the worst part of ourselves, not the better part. That's a sad commentary right there. But we do. We get involved and inoculated in the collective unconscious and all of the politics and the things we hear in politics and all of that ugliness that we are obsessed and compulsed with that serve only the idea of self-righteousness. And we immerse ourselves in that. And of course, that's where our greatest challenges are. We live with the motive of self-aggrandizement, self-preservation, self-righteousness. These things do not help us. They are not going to be the answers to the world. We live in a world where everything is extremely diverse, but one thing is for sure. In our diversity, the majority of people that live on this planet live in fear and hate. That's just the way it is. I can't change that in my students. I can't change that in you. You have to want love more than wanting what you think is love. If you can do that, a great awakening will start inside of you. A great insight will build in you. So, everybody has their philosophy of life. And these philosophies don't serve very well in their daily living. It just is the way it is. I, again, cannot help people who have already come to conclusions about their lives, and most people have. If you're going to live your life in a more conscious manner, you're going to have to live it through kindness, forgiveness, and seeking one thing through love. And this is the great thing to seek. This is the essence of it all. I must seek mercy. If I do not seek mercy, my life will go back into trivia. It will go back into my karma, and I will sustain nothing but the ugliness of karma. Nothing will change. Nothing will be motivated in any other direction except the karma of self and personal preservation, which leads to self-righteousness, which leads to rotting on the vine, as it were. I hope that helped you. I really do. I got to get out of here. Please forgive me. Please, Kevin. Thank you for listening. Have a beautiful day. I'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, all of you. Namaste.